probably 6 or 8 inches thick. There was a screw type thing run down through the center, and then there was another piece of iron there about the same size as the bottom block, and it to set 45 degrees from the bottom block, and the log would sit against that. Now these the screw in the bottom there would allow you to move that back and forth, and then the head rig there had head block had a dog. Well, it was just a fairly long piece of metal, probably run by 3 or something like that, and the top of it had a kind of a dog-shaped sharp end to it, and you'd take and put that up on the log, and you had a ratchet deal on the bottom to pull it tight so that the log couldn't move. Well, it was Sawyer's job to move this carriage back and forth. He had a lever there. It was, of course, a belt-operated deal. And he would have the ratchet setter, the fellow that moved these dogs back and forth, had the ratchet setter set the log out whatever number of inches that he wanted, and they would take it by the saw, and the saw would cut that slab off. Now, this is the job that I liked. I like to be head off bare. In other words, I took the slab there from the head rig or head saws, and I had a kind of a hook type handle there that I could get a hold of the edge of that slab, and when it come off the saw, I would turn the flat portion down. Well, we had hot rolls there, live rolls. These rolls run all the time. And that slab would get down on that, and I would take it right straight out to the big trim saw. Now, then, of course, he would, the trim saw man would cut it up into 4 foot lengths for slab wood, loaded on a car. That was one of my first jobs too in the sawmill, was to load that slab wood on railroad cars. Then they would take the carriage back, and it would be set out, say, 2 inches or whatever, whatever thickness of board that they wanted, and run it through again. I'd immediately pull it down the biggest flat side. Now on this one, of course, it left bark on both sides of it. So I'd only take it down maybe about 10 feet where there was some other live rolls going 45 degrees from it. I'd hit this one foot switch leg, foot button, and raise these live rolls, and it would pull it off to the side. And off to this side, off to the side was the I get kind of out of breath at times. Off to the side was this edger. It had a number of saws in a vertical position, and it would the man could set whatever size he wanted of, or cut whatever off the side that he wanted, and he would trim off this bark so it made a nice board. Then these trimmings would go by the small trim saw and be done away with. If the board was a two inch thick or better, it would be taken over to the large trim saw. If it was 1 inch or that way, the small trim saw would get it, and then when you trimmed the board up to the length you wanted, it would be shoved out to the pile where it was could be used later or picked up later. Now, then we're back to the carriage again. He's got one flat side, so here's where I say the thing has to be hell for stout. We would take the dogs off of this piece, and they had two pieces of machinery they could use. Most of the time, they just used what they call a nigger. It was set down in the log hull, about the center of the carriage, and it had an arm out there that looked almost like this dog deal, and it would sink right into the, it was steam operated. It had a couple of cylinders on it. It would sink the dog right into this log, and you could have it pull the log right over, and the log would go bang down to the flat side. Then from then on, you did the same thing as the first. You cut the slab off. You cut whatever length you wanted for the next time. And then you kept turning this log over until you got it all straight and all squirrel-like. That was the sawyer's job, was to figure out so that the last cut, all he had to do was slice the thing in two, and he had two, say, two-inch planks or whatever, so it all worked out even. That's one of the jobs I didn't have to do, because I pulled a carriage back and forth lots of times, but I didn't have to figure out what to cut out of the log, because now the sawyer had a list of orders right in front of him there, so he knew whether he was supposed to make so many one-inch pieces, or whether he was supposed to make ties. That would be probably a 7x9 size. Or a lot of the little sawmills, where they had some available way of shipping it easily, they would just take all four sides off of the log, and any size that they could make, and they sold that to the Orient. They called them Jap squares. Then they would take these logs over there and resaw whatever they wanted to out of them. Of course, then most of the one-inch stuff would go down through the planer and be planed for whatever they want. They made some, at that time they made shiplap. They don't use shiplap much anymore. It used to be in houses that the subsiding was what they called shiplap. Each side had had a tongue on it onto one side, so that if you made a wall, well, you let the longer tongue hang out so that water would run down over the side of it rather than run through, which worked pretty good. Most of these planers were set out separate from the rest of the mill. Most of the time they would, all the time, unless they set close to the mill, would have to have a steam line run out to them and had their own steam engine for operation. So a number of the jobs I had in the sawmill, I think that firing the boiler was probably the worst job I ever had. They had one man engineer, they called him. Because all he had to do as far as the engine was concerned was to turn the steam valve on and then make sure it had oil to keep the cylinder from sticking. So, it was quite a deal to keep that boiler fired up to, say, say 150 pounds of steam, which they used like, and keep the fire going. If you put too much sawdust in, you tended to kill your fire, then your boiler steam would go down, then you are in trouble. And then if you didn't watch your water that was in the boiler, and you let the boiler water go down, why, of course, it could blow the boiler could blow up on you. So you had to put water in, but if you put water in too fast, you cut your steam, then you're in trouble. So, but I got so I could do it pretty good, but I didn't like that job. It was too much a setting and trying to think of what you needed to do rather than actually physical exercise. Getting back to the end of the sawmill, like these, you had a set of rollers. You rolled the lumber out and put it off the roll case into whatever pile sizes wanted to be. I've got a little story I've got to put in here. In this one time, we had a whole bunch of ties, railroad ties. That was 7 by 9 by 8 feet long. And there's a pile of them there. The railroad car sat right there fairly close to it. And when we when we loaded cars, why, everybody would pitch in and load cars. So this other fellow, he was quite a physical culture man. Matter of fact, he lived right alongside the Gales Creek, and they told a story that every New Year's Day, when the water was high and up there within about a foot of his porch, why, he'd dive into the swimming pool, drive into the Gales Creek pond, and then swim back out. I think probably a little alcohol helped there too. This other sawman, the big saw, and I were packing ties together. I'd be on one end and he'd be on the other. And when we come back to the pile, he said, Bud, they'll call me Bud around the sawmill. You think you could take one of them? And I said, yeah, sure. So he picked up one, and I picked up one, and we started into the railroad car with it. And when he come by Dad said, oh, don't work so hard. Double up. So when he went back to the pile, he said, double up. So he takes two of them. Well, I thought I wouldn't be that foolish. I only took one, but when he went by Dad just, oh, I didn't mean it that way. I hope I've painted an audio picture pretty well of the sawmill. You may or may not get the idea, but the head rig was the bottleneck of the whole thing. So, if we would start on the pond, some of the larger mills had a chain. The logs were fed onto this chain in the pond and brought up to the log haul area, and another fellow would dump them off toward the carriage. So that chain run continuous like. So it, by changing the speed on that, they could have an ample supply always of logs. So then once you got the log on the carriage, all the mills I worked in, or all the mills we had circular saws. Well, a circular saw, even though it was pretty good diameter-like, well, they would get warm or hot, and he'd have to put water on them, and you could only feed them just about so fast. We would send to clog up and whatnot, and stick and give you an awful bad time. So you had to take it easy. Well, now, on the bigger mills, they had what they call a band saw. It was a saw that went up and down, like, and around and around and around on their deals, so that it didn't get hot. So they could feed it about maybe three or four times as fast as they could the circular saw. So that helped speed things up quite a little bit. And then it got to the point where the carriage wasn't going fast enough. So they put in what's called a shotgun feed. Some of them were worked on air, but a lot of them are just a steam cylinder-like. And boy, that shoved that carriage back and forth there pretty fast. Well, now we got to the point where the ratchet setter couldn't set the boards out fast enough. So they put a drive on that so that all he had to do was sit in this strapped-in seat and had a kind of a big circle, iron circle in front of him, and he'd set these timers or whatever they are on it, say for a 2-inch, and the power would shove the log out 2 inches, or whatever size he wanted. So that speeded it up quite a little bit. So now then, the thing was getting the stuff away from it. So lots of times the sawyer would square out his lumber, square out his cant, they call it a cant. After you get all the bark off and it's more or less square, be called a cant. Way he would figure out so that if he wanted, say, 2 by 8, why he would figure out to make maybe 3 4 by 8s. And then that would go on down the rolls to what they called a resaw. It was a bandsaw, too, of a smaller size. And then the resaw, or lots of times they'd call it a splitter, it would just split those 4 by 8s into 2 by 8s. So, or whatever size. That's just just one of the sizes that you could understand, maybe, where they could make all kinds of sizes and come up with whatever. The resaw, you couldn't really, if you got something that you had to saw twice, you had to shove it back against the rolls, and it didn't work out good. You needed to go straight through on the resaw. So that helped things quite a little bit. Then some of the mills put in what's called a Swedish gang. Now this was a number of saws in a vertical position, and the start of it was that you could put a whole log in there and shove it through, and it would make all these slices that could be run through the edger and so forth. And but that while you had some dogs on the bottom to hold it, it would slip around once in a while and cause some trouble, so it wasn't very successful. So they come up with the fact that they would, on the head rig, they would just make one flat side. That made it so the Swedish gang could handle it a lot better. So that speeded up things too. Then along about this time, hey, what are we going to do with all the slab wood and all the edgings and all this stuff? Oh, fine. So they put a conveyor down underneath the mill, and all the extra stuff like slabs and lumber that wasn't any good, or edgings and so forth, went into this conveyor and went out to what they call the hog. Well, this hog was a machine that just beat the lumber all up into, well, you could call it sawdust, kind of a heavy sawdust. And then, of course, a lot of the mills wouldn't take power from, or didn't take power from the power line. They could have their own steam boilers and generators, turbines and generators, and then, of course, they used this, what we call hogged fuel, to fire the boilers. So that makes a mill faster and faster all the time, where we used to get anything from 20 to 40,000 board feet a day with, say, about 10 men. Why, the faster mills would get maybe 100,000. In reviewing the other side of this tape, why, I neglected to put in an item or two. One thing was that these band saws we used for the head rig, a good many times they would have a saw blade on each side. In other words, when the carriage was going, say, forward, it would cut off one cut, and then the ratchet setter would set it out, and on the way back, it would cut another cut off. Well, that meant that already we had a flat side. They're ready to turn the log. So you see, that increased things quite a lot, too. Another item that I didn't get to was that practically all of the towns around Oregon here had, of course, their own power generation facilities with all that extra hog fuel and so forth. Why, they would put in big generators, big turbines and generators, and it would handle the sawmill plus the town. Now, one town I can remember, that they, about one of the last ones that, and I was more or less connected with it, I was around that area there, was Longview.
That spot where Longview is was just a swamp, and the dredgings from the Columbia River, they built that all up. And they built quite a large sawmill there, and they built the town and everything there for the company. Large generators, and they took care of the sawmill and the town, and I think they built some lines to some of the other little small towns around there. So that sawmill was really going. They got their timber up beyond us, up at a little, they built a town up there too, where there's a woods town, Riderwood. Riderwood is now a senior citizen resort of some kind. They had their own railroad. They got a right-of-way of some kind right next to the regular railroad between Portland and Seattle, and they had their own railroad for hauling their logs and so forth down there, and they had a little jitney type thing that people could ride on. I don't know what I was doing. Somehow or other I ended up in Longview, and I took that little jitney-like thing, and went up, and they let me off at Olequah there, and it was a kind of a nice little ride. Another one that comes to mind was the Vernonia. Vernonia being went out there, way out in the sticks, you might say. Way they had quite a large mill there. And they logged that whole section up through there. They, of course, provided power for the town, and I think they provided power for a couple of the smaller towns a little out there. So There's also a little power company there that did all the old meter reading and that type of stuff. Of course, they bought the power from the sawmill, but they had a little 50 kW hydro power plant up on a creek there, up near Kesey, and it was just enough to hold the say the street lights and all sawmill lights and maybe a small motor or two around the mill when the mill was completely down. So after 12 o'clock at night, between 12 and 6, if they had some repair work on some of the generators, why they could shut their turbines completely down and let this little 50 kW take care of it. I grew up there around Forest Grove, and as I remember, they brought their or hauled their hog fuel and so forth in there. I don't know from some of the. At one time, there was about 20 sawmills in Washington County, and so they probably got hog fuel from some of those other outfits. Matter of fact, a lot of the houses used to be heated with sawdust. Had a regular hopper like a sawdust burner, and it was a real nice heat. It was kind of a moist heat, and you felt real nice and warm and cozy. Well, in the case of Forest Grove, they had a great big, it's a big wheel, as a Corliss type engine. The reason you could tell it was Corliss, C-O-R-L-E-S-S, I think, probably a man's name. The reason you could tell it was a Corliss, it had about a 20-foot flywheel on it to smooth out any differences. So, of course, they had a hole in the ground for the wheel to go down, so the shaft was about even with the floor or wherever it was handy there, hooked up to the generator and so forth. That Corliss engine, I think, wore out or something. Anyway, it was fairly small. They only had just the one generator. Generators won't generate any electricity unless they have some excitation of some kind. So they had a little generator there hooked up to a gas engine to start the big generators to work. I always thought that was kind of cute. Most places, of course, have just motor generator type thing. Of course, they have power from the power line or whatever it is all the time, so they can regenerate their stuff. Now, as I say, it must have wore out or something. They put in a couple of turbines, and they worked real good. The power cost kept going down as the we used more and more of it. And then along in there, Fairbanks Morse come along with some diesel engines. And they agreed to take their price or their money for the diesel engines out of the extra power that would be made and sold even at a cheaper price. And everybody kind of laughed at him, that won't work. But it did. I think power was 8 cents, something like that, when we had the Corliss engine. Oh, wait a minute. I think it was 12 cents when we had the Corliss engine, 8 cents when we had the turbines, and 5 cents when we got to the diesels. So anyway, they put these diesels in and got them going real good. Then when Bonneville come in, why, we changed over to the Bonneville power line. And these diesel engines, I understand, were sold to the government and went to Alaska. Getting back to some of the more interesting things, here's a story I tell on Wesley. Wesley was the younger brother. Him and his little cousin, Nelda, that would be Kaylee Sherman, that'd be Dad Sherman's brother, his little daughter. They were both about, 5 and 6 or something along in that area, like. And they played together, had a big time all the time. Harry and I chummed around together quite a lot, so they teamed up. So this particular time, I wasn't home or wasn't around there. Of course, I heard about it a lot. Let's go back a little bit there. Whenever you would build your sawmill, well, lots of times there would be a stump or something right in the way. So at that time, why we had regular dynamite and so forth, so we would actually blow the stump out of the ground and clear it so we could get by it if we couldn't get over it or around it. And then too, when you'd build, say, a skid road. Now, in the case of Olequah there, instead of a skid road, why, we used the little tram, the freight railroad car-like, to bring the logs down. But in lots of places, why, you would just string the your cable out, and every now and then, why, it'd be a stump right in the way, so it had to be dynamited out. So, because every time you'd go by there, the log would catch up on it. So, and then, of course, on these skid roads, you used them so much that you'd dig a regular trail into the, trench into the ground. So that lots of times they'd take small trees, say up to a foot through, and put them crossways so that the log didn't pick up so well. Mainly was so the log didn't pick up so much dirt and mud to have to wash off in the pond. But of course, it didn't really care about how big a hole they made. But I've seen some of them 20 feet deep, especially where the little knoll that they had to go over, where they just cut it, let it cut through, and so it comes through almost flat. But they'd put these logs down and so forth. But like I say, they had to dynamite the big tree, big stumps out. Well, in this day, like I say, I wasn't home, but here come both of those kids, Wesley and Nelda, with a stick of dynamite. It's a stick of dynamite in both hands. Each one, four sticks of dynamite. Of course, they brought them right up to Mother. Big firecracker. They kind of knew what they were, all right. it about gave Mother a heart attack, I think. So I don't know what kind of a system they used, but Mother had some kind of a system whereby she hung a something out outside there, maybe a red flag of some kind or something. And this time she hung out two or whatever it was. And boy, Dad Sherman was up there in about two yanks. And of course, he realized quick that they weren't as explosive as Mom thought. So he collected them and went down to where they had been hidden,
Of course, I knew where they were, and I knew where the caps were. But this was about, I think, 40% stumping or something like that. So it wasn't a real... I think you could actually take it, and if you didn't drop it too hard, well, it wouldn't explode. Or even throw it against something. If you didn't throw it too awful hard, it wouldn't explode. It took a real shake like the cap would give it to make it explode, because see, it was only about 40% nitroglycerin. The rest of it was sawdust or something else like clay. So it wasn't really too, but he took it, Dad Shermer took it, and I happened to go by there a day or two later. It was disappeared. Also the caps, he found another place to hide it. The thing of it is that when you we used a wagon, big heavy wagon, to haul this lumber from the sawmill down to the siding where the railroad cars were, that are there at Olequo. This was at Olequo, of course. And actually in a few months' time, you would actually wear the a tire off of your wagon. Now those tires were about half to three quarters thick iron, but rolling that much and so forth, actually you would wear that, wear the wagons out, as well as maybe break some of the other parts of the wagon were mostly wood with some kind of metal reinforcing, but you'd wear your wagon out. So in this little shack, it was enclosed on just two sides, I think it was. Now this dynamite was clear in the corner where it was all enclosed, and there must have been three of these wagon parts. They, of course, saved all the parts that were any good to their wagon when they bought a new one. And in behind all these wagon parts, actually, I was too big to get in there. Somehow or other, these little kids wiggled in behind there and got this dynamite out. Boy, it sure upset Mom. Getting back to the skid road, sawmills used various methods of transporting their lumber or logs, both probably, from the woods to the mill, or from the mill to the loading dock. Most of the stuff went by railroad. Some of the local people, of course, would come and bring a wagon, a horse and wagon, and they'd get whatever lumber they had, even if they had to make a number of trips. Practically all of the big planks from Olequo went to this Nebraska Bridge people in Nebraska. But there was quite a lot of tubophores and one by 12 or two by 12s, and the all the local people would come and get lumber for whatever they needed to. We had a planer, and it could be they could get planed lumber if they wished. So that, but in speaking of these various ways, now there at Olequo, we used what I called a tram, or that little railroad car that brought the logs down. And then we used horses and wagon to take the lumber on down to the railroad. Now then, in a number of places, especially up along the Columbia Gorge, they used what we call a flume, F-L-U-M-E. It was just a V-shaped type of carrying, I don't know what you could call it. Anyway, a flume is a flume. And the water would run down it. They'd have enough water, and they would, generally would dam up the water up near the top, say up near the mill. If the mill was way up, say up on top of a hill somewhere, maybe a mile or more away, and the railroad was down, say, on the river bank down there, they would dam up this little creek-like, and when they would cut a piece of lumber, they'd let a little water out, and it'd wash this lumber clear down this flume. This flume would go clear down there, and this V-shaped container-like, and it would go way down there, and lots of the mills would have their planing outfit down near the river, and they would just let the lumber down. Some places they would actually, where they had enough water for their flume, they would actually put the logs in the flume and take them down to the river where they could be rafted. That's some of the other ways that they did things in the sawmill days. Those, I never was connected with a flume like, but I was around and visited. See, among these sawmills, sawmill people would kind of go around to the other mills to see what they were doing and see how they were getting along and all that sort of thing. And as a little kid with Dad Sherman, I got to see all these things. So I got really educated. I spoke about the sawmills having generators and so forth. Of course, I worked in all these small mills where we didn't have such things like that. I never did work in a electric sawmill except as an electrician, as I worked. Matter of fact, there at Forest Grove, I actually wired the Carnation lumber mill, the whole thing there at one time. I think they'd burned out or something, and they, forget now what the score was. Anyway, I did all the wiring on that myself. But as far as lights, we never had any lights at Olequah. Matter of fact, the first time I had really seen lights at all was Granddad's place in Portland, the house where I was born. He had had lights in there, and I'm pretty sure he had a electric iron too. Grandma was always good for gadgets. She liked gadgets, and so I'm pretty sure that irons were coming in about that time. So she had probably had a flat iron like, and she would use it when she wasn't on the telephone. The telephones were in about that time, too. Water. We never had any water in the house till we got to Olequah. Well, when we were Olequah there, I don't know just when, probably about the time they built the house, they picked out a little spring way up in the hills there somewhere, and they put a pipe, I'm pretty sure most of it was covered, down to the cook shack, and then up the hill just a little bit to our house, and on up the hill to Kaylee's house. That was Dad Sherman's brother, and we had water in our house. We didn't have a flushable toilet, of course, but we didn't have to pack water for our cooking and, well, of course,
far as bathing is concerned, we would heat water on the stove in what they call a wash boiler. It was a kind of an oblong type boiler, copper boiler, that you could heat water in. And then it would be put into this big galvanized wash tub about 3 feet across, and made a pretty good bathtub every Saturday night, bath time. So that was the first water we had in the house. Now, we had one drawback to it. See, this water came by the cookhouse. So when they were drawing water, why, we didn't get any. And same with the people above us. So, but it worked out a lot better than the packing the water anyway. I noticed that at the time, why, Kaylee's house there, they used to keep a bucket and a ladle more or less underneath the faucet. So when the water came, why, they would fill this bucket up, and then they could shut it off, of course. But that way, why, they always had water, whether the water was running through the pipe or not. It, at least it's better than packing it. So that'll clean up the water line, I guess. There at Oliqua, we could look right across number of miles there to Mount St. Helens. Mount St. Helens was a nice, even, we called it an ice cream cone. And it was a nice mountain there to look at. Now it's got a kind of a flat top on it. I think since about 1981, I think it was, way when it blew. One time there, now I can't remember the name of this zeppelin, but one, I think it was on a Sunday morning, and it was a kind of a foggy morning there, why this lighter than air balloon like come by. We could hear it, man. It sounded like it was just right, and I think it was just above the clouds there, and they were pretty well down on the, and we heard it go by. We got dressed. I'm not sure whether we were dressed or not, but anyway, we heard it go by, and so we got busy and got in the car, and we followed that zeppelin all the way up to almost Tacoma before we got a sight of it, got out of the clouds so we could see it. And now, I'm not sure just which was the Hindenburg or just which one, but I think it met a pretty bad fate at one time. I'm beginning to run out of stories a little bit on the sawmill. After all, this is the third tape. So when Uncle Uncle Fred would come up from California. I think I told you he was a elevator operator down there. He would come up from California, and we would go up the Toutle River. That's from Castle Rock up toward Mount St. Helens. And this lake up there, Silver Lake, it's still there. Spirit Lake was beyond it. But there was no, at the time, there was no road. I think you could take a pack horse and so forth going up to Spirit Lake. It was awful good hunting up there, and lots of times the this fellow I spoke about was such a good marksman and would get so drunk. Him and some other fellows would go up there. They would pack lots of spirits with them, so they would be, but they'd go up there hunting at Spirit Lake. Spirits and spirits, huh? So I was going to say, Uncle Fred and I would go up to Silver Lake. Now that area had been cut over about 4 or 5 years before. I don't know whether there must have been a sawmill there. I don't ever remember seeing even the what was left of a sawmill there, but there could have been. Of course, now that was the Toodle River come out of that, I'm pretty sure. So they could have rafted up a number of rafts and taken them down in the spring when they had lots of fresh water. Way they could have taken them clear down to the Columbia. So that might have been what they did. But
well, that made a nice little lake there that was real good fishing. Now, this will be the end of the 3 sawmill tapes. So have a good day.